In April 2023, the United States was forced to evacuate our embassy in Khartoum, Sudan, as civil conflict consumed the nation. In this three-part series, you'll hear from a range of DSS personnel involved in the operation, giving you a first-hand look at how we enabled diplomats and American citizens to withdraw safely.
Welcome back to After Action. I'm your host, Damaris Garcia. We recently spoke to DSS personnel who were on the ground to evacuate our personnel from the U.S. Embassy in Sudan. However, there were others in the department and in the U.S. government that were part of that mission. And with us today is Special Agent Troy Hively, who was on the ground, and we'll talk a little bit more about that today. Welcome, Troy. Thank you for being on our show.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So can you tell us a little bit about your role in the evacuation on the ground in Khartoum, in Sudan?
So I'll probably have to back up a little bit and talk a little bit about what the Office of Mobile Security Deployments is. We just call it MSD. And essentially, we are the tactical team for the U.S. Department of State for the Diplomatic Security Service. And when embassies get into trouble, when they have maybe political instability, there's a disaster of some sort, hurricane comes into, you know, like a Caribbean nation,
right,
and the embassy says we need help, the people they call is our office, MSD. We've got guys who are experts in doing high rescues, collapsed structures, buildings, things of that sort.
Okay.
So if we had, say, Caribbean nation got hit with a hurricane,
right,
we could put together a team of agents, tack on a couple experts in things like recovery, and then launch them out to a Caribbean nation. For something like this, where it was, we're trying to evacuate both the embassy staff from the embassy and then also later on American citizens from a country like Sudan, then we put together a team. In this particular case, we ended up sending two teams since it was going to be a larger job. And then we tacked on to that some medical staff, because oftentimes with evacuations, if you have a potential of a civil war, which is what we were facing, then there's a chance of injury, whether due to accidents,
right,
or violence.
Yeah.
So we have the ability to tack on, we call them guardians. They're basically, most of them are ex-Special Forces or Special Operations Command medics. And they do rotations at emergency rooms to keep their skills sharp. They go down to do training at Bragg or the SOCOM course repeatedly to keep their skills sharp. So that was attached onto the teams going to handle Sudan. And then we also have an issue with communications. Oftentimes, if you're operating in places like Africa, communications can be a pretty serious impediment to your operations. So we tacked on a tactical communicator onto the team. And so our tactical communicators, pretty much any kind of means of communication, whether it's going to be a satellite, military radios, the radio system that the Department of State uses, they can handle all those different mediums to make sure that we can communicate. We found in the past, a good example would be last year, January-ish, there was a lot of instability and violence going on in the city, the country of Kazakhstan.
Right.
And that country, in that particular case, decided to shut down all communications. So the government decided to shut down cell phones.
Cell phone towers.
Turned off.
Right.
They turned off all the internet. So the only way to communicate was by satellite. So we sent a team to Kazakhstan last year also, and they were real heavy on tactical communicators and brought some very robust satellite communications. So Sudan, having learned lessons in places like Kazakhstan, when we went to Sudan, we took also a very heavy communications package. So,
and so you're talking about how many people, you said we sent two teams, right? And the teams, I guess, we can add and we can sort of add and take out the people that we need according to the situation that you're running into. So how many people are we talking about here?
So we're talking two teams of six, and then the addition of a guardian, which is the medic, and then the addition of a tactical communicator.
So we have this team of between 12 and 14 people who are in Sudan now.
Not yet. So
how do you get there?
That's always a challenge also. So one of the neat things with MSD is sometimes you might hit over to a problem spot with military aircraft. Sometimes we will catch a commercial flight. There's been cases where we've had to fly into one country and then drive into the problem country. And then also we've got pre-established contracts with some private companies that have their own jets. And then we'll fly what we call contract air. So in this particular case, we took two Gulfstream jets, which were contract, and flew those from DC over into Djibouti. And Djibouti is a place where we have a substantial amount of U.S. military forces already built up in Camp Lemonnier out there. And so we staged out of Djibouti for this particular operation. So we flew out there by the contract air. That's always, I mean, the movies you see, oh, there's a Gulfstream jet or a Learjet, and it sounds pretty sexy, but typically it's not very sexy. It's, you've got all your gear, you're trying to take everything you think that you might need. You've got these big Pelican cases full of like satellite gear and everything else, and you've got your body armor and all kinds of other equipment, medical supplies.
Are you bringing vehicles as well?
In this case, no. Okay. That might be a possibility, but you're all crammed inside this small private jet, essentially. So it's not very glamorous. It's not very sexy. You're all trying to, you know, squirm in between all these boxes of equipment and whatnot. And so it might appear glamorous on the movies and whatnot, but it's not so comfortable in real life.
Understood. So you're in Djibouti now with all your equipment, your team. What next? How do you get into Sudan next?
So that was where things got interesting. For us, you know, Khartoum, Sudan is an interesting success story for MSD, but not in the way that you might think. There's some different philosophies on how we structure tactical teams in the federal world. So there's basically nine federal tactical teams. You have us, MSD, you've got FBI's HRT, you've got U.S. Marshal Service SOG, and some other ones as well. And there's differences in how we retain people and hang on to them and how long we keep them operational. So for example, HRT is fantastic. They keep guys for 10, 15 years to do an entire career with HRT. And they get to be very, very good at what they do. They're highly trained. They get a ton of experience. And like, if I had a family member that needed to be rescued by someone, I don't want those guys having trained with them. But the downside of that is you concentrate all that experience right there in HRT. Mm. With MSD, your typical career or your typical tour with MSD is 3 years, maybe 5 years. And our idea is that we want to bring you into MSD, give you a lot of tactical training, give you a lot of good experience responding to crises, and then we want to send you back out into the broader DS community to diffuse that ability, that training, that experience back into the pool of DS agents. So one of the success stories with Khartoum, Sudan, is that the regional security officer who was running the security and running the most of those issues with the embassy in Khartoum was an ex-MSD agent.
Excellent.
So he already had a lot of the background, the experience, the training to handle lots of the issues that popped up in Khartoum. There's various DoD elements in Djibouti. And one of the great things I like about working with some of the DoD folks is if you go into their space, there's this wonderful sign before you go into their operations center, and it said, "The mission is all." And that's kind of their motto that they live by and operate by. So when my team got into Djibouti, we started conferring with our military counterparts. They're talking about how we're going to get in and to evacuate the embassy staff. As we had our discussions with them, it quickly became apparent that because the ex-MSD agent at the embassy had already taken care of a lot of the tasks we would normally take care of, we talked to those military guys and said, there really isn't all that much for us to do with respect to the embassy. If we go, we're just taking up extra seats on these aircraft that you're going to need for shooters, that you might need for medical staff, or that you might need for just space to pull people out.
Right.
So the mission's all. In this case, the mission says it's probably not in the best interest of the embassy staff you're evacuating for us to go with you. So we made the decision with them to stand down and to remain in Djibouti instead of going with them out to the embassy for the evacuation.
Okay.
Which was the right call. No one liked it because everyone wanted to be, right, you know, with that team going out there, but that's the decision that made the most sense. And so we moved more to a support role, which was critical because DoD is pretty amazing. They've got incredible resources and a very broad reach, but their reach is not as broad as that of a U.S. Department of State.
Because we're everywhere, right?
Because
we're stationed everywhere.
Right.
Yeah.
So as we were doing the planning for this particular mission, one of the contingency plans and the worries was that it's a civil war. It's starting. What happens if someone's shot? What happens if someone's injured in the evacuation? If someone got critically injured, when they're evacuating, they probably have to fly to Germany. That's hours and hours and hours. And if you're talking something like you need a neurosurgeon or a heart surgeon, something like that, you want that kind of medical expertise fast. So that was something that we could offer to the military because they didn't have it ready at hand. So because we have embassies in almost every single country in the world, because all of our embassies typically have medical staff that go out and survey and talk to all the local hospitals, we've got a Rolodex ready of, we know that there are world-class neurosurgeons and heart surgeons in Nairobi.
Right.
That we can get to fast, which is much faster than going to Germany.
Than going to Germany, absolutely.
So we already set up the contingency plan with our guardian that if there's any kind of an issue with, may someone, God forbid, got shot to the head or got shot to the heart, whatnot, that as soon as that military aircraft landed in Djibouti, we had a State Department plane ready to go to load them onto that bird and fly them right to Nairobi within a very short period of time, get them to a neurosurgeon or get them to a heart surgeon,
okay.
You know, those kinds of specialties. So that was kind of the support role we fell into with that operation because we weren't going to be in the ground, but we could still support the evacuation. And thankfully, it wasn't required.
So tell us a little bit about your role, Troy's role in the MSD team when you went into this mission.
So we have three sections in MSD, Alpha, Bravo, and Charlie. And each section has, you know, two to four teams. So I was with the Charlie section at the time. And so we went over with two teams. And so typically, if you're sending just a team, then that team leader runs everything for MSD. But if we send two or more teams, then we call it the operations chief, that's the person in charge of the section, will go with the teams to provide that little bit extra command and control because you have multiple teams. So once we got into Djibouti, pretty much most what I was focused on was talking to the embassy, talking to the ambassador, the DCM, the regional security officer, and then going and being directly talking to the various DOD elements that were at Camp Lemonnier. And there's several that I was talking to directly.
So it sounds like you served as the main liaison for the mission in order to coordinate all the separate elements that were working there.
Right. For the day-to-day operations, yes. I was the main liaison with the military. On top of that, though, is that DS has liaisons to the major commands for the Department of State, so our Department of Defense. So, you know, whether it's CENTCOM or with JSOC or any other kind of commands, AFRICOM, European Command, we have DS agents specifically designed to be liaisons, but they're very high level.
Right.
They're kind of giving you more, you know, at the department to department level, that's where they're kind of providing an interface. But at the day-to-day operations, the ground level, how many guys are you going to put in this aircraft, the number of seats, those kinds of things, that's where I was fitting into the picture.
So we were successful, I hope?
Absolutely.
We got everybody out?
Yes.
And then we had to go back in and take care of the American citizens that were there. So what did that, how was that mission different?
So that mission was different in that the scope becomes much, much wider. It's one thing when you're looking at just trying to get a small group of people in, for the most part, a fairly concentrated area, just the American citizens, or excuse me, just the embassy staff, to now we're looking to try to get all these American citizens out. One of the things with the Department of State is we don't know exactly how many American citizens are in country because they don't have to tell us.
They don't, no.
They may or may not decide to let us know. And over the years, you know, we've gotten a decent idea of, you know, talking to local employed staff, looking at different stats. We can kind of make a guesstimate. Sometimes they're pretty accurate, sometimes they're not. So we weren't quite sure exactly how many American citizens there were in country. And so that's what made that such a difficult problem because you weren't quite sure just how big or small of a problem it was.
Right.
And then you tack in the additional difficulties of there's a civil war going on with these two groups that are going at it. And also just, again, information was hard to come by. So one of the neat things that I think is very interesting is getting to meet lots of different people. So when it came to trying to find information, I was talking to anyone I could. So we have what's called OSAC, which is like a Department of State and DSS group that looks to organize lots of American companies that are operating overseas and then spread security information through the OSAC network.
And the OSAC is the Overseas Security Advisory Council.
Yep.
Okay, so these are active in every country, or at least most countries where we have some kind of American company presence, right? Okay.
So I reached out through OSAC and said, well, who are the people that you have in Sudan?
Mm.
And they didn't have a whole lot of companies, but they did have contacts with several NGOs.
Ah.
So we ended up talking to some of these NGOs saying, what are you guys doing? What are you guys seeing in Sudan? You have your staff in Sudan. What are they seeing? Are you trying to get them out? How are you getting them out? So it was interesting talking to them and seeing in many cases that they didn't have a lot of resources. Like Samaritan's Purse was one of the NGOs that was operating in Sudan. Not a lot of resources. They didn't have a badge. They didn't have diplomatic passports. And yet they were out there with their employees trying to evacuate their staff out of Sudan. So they gave us, and several other organizations gave us some really good on the ground, eyes on the ground information of what was going on. So between us, the DOD, other agencies, we started putting together an idea of where are the hot spots, where do we think it's safe to travel, where do you think it's not safe to travel. And then kind of the plan basically coalesced around, you know, aircraft are great, they're fast, but they're not great for moving tons and tons of people.
Oh.
Economically and logistically speaking. So if you're looking to move like thousands of people, again, aircraft might not be your best bet. So with DOD, the plan solidified around, let's get people from Khartoum, which is kind of the epicenter for all the fighting, because that is the capital, put them on buses and then ship them up to the port of Sudan on the coast and then try to get them out by ship.
Thank you, Troy. Thank you for everything that you do and everything that the Office of Mobile Security Deployment does. It's an important mission. It's one that probably not a lot of people know that we have our own essentially international SWAT team, basically, rescue. And thank you so much for your time here today. It's been a pleasure.
My pleasure. Thank you.